Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Scottsdale, Arizona, Friday, February 2nd. Hello again, along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson, checking in for our weekly visit on this Groundhog Day. And I don't know how it was in your part of the country, but here in Scottsdale, Arizona, not a cloud in the sky, bright and sunny. So yes, the groundhog saw his shadow. But you know, if you look at the calendar from February 2nd to March 21st, that's about a six-week period till spring gets underway. But anyway, good to be with you. But what a tumultuous week in the marketplace the last couple of days, particularly. All three major U.S. stock indices tumbled today, with the Dow seeing its worst percentage drop since June of 2016. The reason, according to traders, the climbing bond yields that prompted a sell-off in the stock market. So let's take a look at some of the events and the numbers today. Worries about the impact of a tightening job market on the prospects for inflation and a surge in bond yields still sent the three indices sharply lower, despite some positive earnings reports today and certainly a good monthly employment report from the Labor Department. But it was the biggest daily point fall in the Dow in more than 9 years. And with today's rout, Wall Street's three major indices logged their biggest weekly losses in 2 years. After closing at record highs the previous week, the S&P 500 and the Dow saw their worst week since early January 2016, while NASDAQ had its worst week since early February of 2016. So we take a look at the changes, and here are some of the big numbers. The biggest one-day percent drop for the Dow Industrial since June 24th of 2016. The NASDAQ ended with the biggest one-day percent drop since August 10th. It was the worst week for the Dow and the S&P since January of 2016, the worst week for the NASDAQ since February of 2016. Is that enough bad news for you? Well, it's reality. And there are people who look at this kind of a down move in the stock market a couple of ways. Number one, could be the end of the rally, and it could be a big decline. But then there's the other side that looks at the drop in prices today on Wall Street and say, that's a buying opportunity. Well, we'll have to wait till next week now to find out. But people are starting to really get increasingly uncomfortable with the rapid rise in interest rates that we have seen and the uncertainty of how that's actually going to start to play out relative to competition for stocks. That, according to Chuck Carlson, Chief Executive Officer at Horizon Investment Services in Hammond, Indiana. The CBOE Volatility Index, they call it the fear factor or the worry factor. It's the most widely followed barometer of expected near-term volatility for the S&P 500, rose more than 4 points today to 1786, its highest level since November of 2016. And the VIX options trading volume hit a record high today. So analysts are now seeing fourth quarter earnings growth of 13.6% for the S&P 500. That's up from their expectation of a 12% increase on January 1st. ExxonMobil and Chevron Corporation shares down over 5% and 5.6% respectively after the oil companies posted lower than expected fourth quarter profit. Also today, Alphabet Google fell 5 1/3% after the Google parent's fourth quarter profit came in below expectations. Apple shares off by 4 1/3% Investors worried about the phone maker's weak outlook amid reports of scaled back iPhone X production. Amazon.com was a bright spot. It was up 2.9% as Wall Street analysts quickly upped their price targets following the online retailer's impressive earnings report. What about the oil market and the rally that it has been seeing for the past few months? Oil prices down today as the dollar surged following strong jobs numbers, though compliance with output cuts by OPEC and rising global demand kept much of the early year oil rally in place. U.S. crude settled down 35 cents. $65.45 a barrel. And the Brent crude down 1.5%, $1.07 a barrel, ending the day at $68.58 a barrel. So oil market certainly didn't undergo the decline that we saw in the stock market. So let's take a look ahead. Take a look at next week and what they're expecting on Wall Street and the stock market activity. American International Group, one of the largest U.S. insurers, plans to detail its earnings for the fourth quarter on Thursday. It's expected to be a messy report. Special items related to the new U.S. law stand to reduce the tax benefits that AIG has been able to reap due to the hefty losses it posted during the 2007-2009 financial downturn. General Motors Company will report fourth quarter results on Tuesday. It should post a strong showing after telling Wall Street it would hit towards the top end of its previously stated earnings target. Walt Disney Company, the media and theme park company that's in the process of buying most of Fox for $52 billion, expected to post a rise in first quarter revenue on Tuesday. Results should be helped by the success of the Star Wars series. The fourth quarter results will be coming out from Tesla, Elon Musk's company. The company expected to post a jump in revenue as it benefits from higher sales of its Model S, Model X, and Model 3 vehicles. However, the electric car maker will continue to post losses as production efforts for its mass market Model 3 ramp up and the company burns a lot of cash. Twitter, the microblogging site that has never reported a profit since its debut, expected to report a gain for the first time in the fourth quarter as efforts to cut costs are paying off. Chipmaker NVIDIA Corporation expected to report an increase in fourth quarter revenue and profit on Thursday. Media conglomerate Viacom, which is exploring a merger with CBS, expected to report a decline in quarterly revenue on Thursday. Chipotle Mexican Grill still trying to get back on its feet after a sales-crushing series of food safety lapses in 2015 will report quarterly results on Tuesday. And media mogul Barry Diller's IAC Interactive Corporation expected to report a rise in fourth quarter revenue on Wednesday. The world's largest generic drug maker, Teva Pharmaceuticals Industries, reports results on Thursday. That company has struggled amid falling U.S. drug prices. And then investors will be looking out for commentary on Allergan's long-term plans for its pipeline. Meanwhile, Cardinal Health expected to report a decline in quarterly profit on Thursday. So that's a lot of what's going to be happening next week in earnings reports. But whether or not those reports will help stem the decline that we have seen the last couple of days on Wall Street of this week remains to be seen what it'll take to turn that around. Will it take somebody who sees it as a buying opportunity? We'll have to wait and see. Finally, Tyson Foods is ready to benefit from overall solid protein demand that is absorbing plentiful livestock supplies when the company reports first quarter earnings on Thursday. According to recent USDA data, the total U.S. cattle herd as of January 1st is the largest for that period in 9 years. And as of December 1st, the United States had the most hogs on farms since 1943. Much of that because of lower feed prices that is hurting a good part of the agricultural economy. Well, Max spent time this week at the National Cattlemen's Beef Association in Phoenix, and he'll be checking in with us to talk about some of the goings on there when we continue on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
David Williams from Informa Economics. How are the folks in the cattle industry getting along right now? And of course, I ask you that question knowing that there's almost always somebody who isn't doing that well in the cattle business.
They have done really well for 2017. They have had a tremendous amount of profitability, and that profitability has gone from the cow-calf all the way to the packer, to the feeder, to the processor, and all the way through the industry. Everyone has been very, very profitable in 2017 and is staying profitable for the beginning of 2018.
We don't always see that, do we?
That is not the norm. Usually someone's a winner and someone's a loser. But today, the industry is really a big win-win for everyone.
You did say for the beginning of 2018. Are you concerned about later in the year?
Yeah, there's no doubt that as we get to the back half of 2018, we are concerned on the feeder margins. Will they continue to be there? That is one of the things that we're looking on the outlook to see how that performs. But we do expect that the industry to be very heavily profitable as we get through the first half of 2018.
Feeder margins, well, we'll have cheap grain all year, will we not?
Well, that is a debate. Again, there's plenty of people out there. We'll talk about a little bit of La Nina that has continued to kind of pull its head out of the oceans and see where that's going. But that is definitely a hot topic because we are kind of in La Nina cycle, and we're already seeing in Argentina where they've had a lot less rain, and there is some forecast that we could see less moisture that will affect the cow-calf pastures in the spring and the summer, and then also, of course, it'll affect our crops and what will grain prices do after that.
Some of those cow-calf folks have already been complaining about how dry it is. We've heard that. In fact, my goodness, 3 months ago I was hearing it from some folks, for example, in southern Missouri. And you look on the drought monitor map and doggone it, that whole state seems dry right now. Talk about how that can have a ripple effect in the beef industry.
Well, there's a couple things that really affect it, and it definitely, if it starts in Texas, moves through Oklahoma into Missouri, heavy cow-calf operations. So what they will have to do is market early. So as soon as that calf gets to a 300 to 400 weight and it's 6 months old, it needs to be moved. And typically those cattle move to backgrounders, which are on winter wheat. That might not happen this year because of if there's a lack of moisture, it will also affect those backgrounders. And so those cattle will have to move immediately to a feed yard. And so they're going to come in younger. They're going to have to be fed a little bit longer, but that'll push the system to for more cattle that we already have a pretty good wall of cattle that are here for the first half of 2018.
That backgrounding of the wheat typically takes place in like Kansas, Oklahoma?
Yeah, Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas are really the heartland for that. sometimes it happens in Colorado, but as we all know, Colorado has been very, very dry, and that's really they're lacking a lot of moisture on the eastern front right now.
We don't have a shortage of meat overall, do we? I mean, poultry numbers are strong as well as pork, are they not?
Yeah, everyone is expanding on the protein sector, so we're looking at 3% more poultry, 2 to 3% more pork. You know, turkey's a little bit on the flat side, and beef, you know, again, that number will be debated for a while, but, you know, we are still increasing.
On the demand side, the domestic demand, of course, is very important, what we're doing in terms of consuming, whether it's bacon for the pork industry or whether it's the hamburger and steaks for the beef people. How is the domestic demand right now? How does that look? The economy has been strong. Stock market is doing well. Employment is quite good.
Yeah, there's no doubt that we've had tremendous domestic demand as we come out of the fourth quarter of 2017. The restaurants, food service, retail, everyone has done very, very well with beef demand, pork demand, chicken demand. It has been outstanding. The economy's doing well. Really, in general, America, you know, again, is typically when the economy is doing well, people eat more meat. And so that is definitely held true. And so the U.S. demand has been holding up. But again, we produce more, and so that export number continues to rise, and so that's what's really been also supporting our prices is the unbelievable demand from export markets.
We really ratchet it up. I mean, it's interesting. You said we produce more. We do. I mean, the pork people and the poultry people, they just keep on cranking it up like there's never going to be a top that is hit out there. I mean, that's what's happening, is it not?
Absolutely, yeah. There's definitely, right now we're about 19% on the beef side as far as our exports. We are close to 23 to 24% on the pork exports, and then chicken is staying stable at around the 18% export level. So again, those levels are very, very important on maintaining our price. But again, the global demand for protein continues to grow. Not only are the incomes increasing in the United States, but all across the globe. And they're demanding more protein in China, more protein in Southeast Asia, more protein all across the globe, in Europe, everywhere else. So it is something that continues to be a wonderful news for the U.S. producer and all the people involved in the meat business.
So if I understood you correctly, roughly one out of every four hogs produced in the United States is being produced for the export market.
Yes, exactly. And there is some estimates by 2020 that it'll be over 30% that will be for our export markets.
2020. Now, I assume there were some assumptions plugged into that expectation that by 2020 that will happen. One of those must be predicated on the belief that trade is still going to be very strong and that trade agreements are still going to be in place to help foster that and that there won't be any significant trade impediments. How questionable is that right now, as you see it, David, with all of this trade agreement activity in play right now?
Well, definitely that is a dark cloud that keeps brewing over the industry. And so that's something that we're all concerned with. Yes, everyone in the agriculture market, we want to have more free markets. We want to have more opportunity to sell our product and be competitive across the globe. So definitely any kind of bumps in the road on this free trade or having issues with our export markets could definitely could bring some dark clouds over us and really hurt our prices.
But let me also ask you, are our competitors ready to fill the gap? In other words, if something were to happen in terms of the pork trade, let's just use that as an example. Where else in the world would our overseas markets turn to fill that gap of the pork they need that they're now getting from the United States?
Well, there's no doubt that Europe has continued to produce more. They're expected to be up 1 to 3% this year. Brazil also is in the 2 to 3% range. So, again, the rest of the world is also ramping up to meet that demand. So, you know, again, there's some, you know, definitely trade disruptions in other countries. But, you know, there is someone there that, especially in the EU, would be looking to replace the U.S. business.
Let us not forget we're not the only game in town, you're saying.
That is absolutely true, especially on the pork side, we would definitely have global competition on producing pork to ship globally.
The one analyst I was reading the other day said, you know, this almost has the feel of 2012 in the grain market here. In the fall of 2012, when corn and soybean producers enjoyed that robust grain market and everybody was saying, as he put it, well, this will never end. This is just going to keep on going. He said that the meat market almost feels that way right now.
It definitely feels like it's getting a little bit toppy, and that is definitely a very big concern. But again, we have to continue to keep our markets open. We also have to continue to create more demand domestically and continue to prove our products to the consumer. And that consumer continues to change. Millennials versus baby boomers, there's definitely a difference of eating habits and different trends there. So, you know, we have to continue to change with the mindset and continue to produce the top quality, affordable product that we've done for years and years.
Those changes in what is a very mature market in the United States, does that suggest to you that over the long haul, we'll continue to see the domestic market accounting for less of the total demand, that the world will be taking even more from us, as you alluded earlier?
Well, that has been a thought out there in the industry for a while, but you know, we're starting to see more tick up in beef demand and also chicken demand. So that is something that is something that is in play. And then, as we all know, in America, we love our bacon. And we don't just love our bacon for breakfast, but we love it for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and even sometimes on our ice cream. So that is something that is very, very, again, it's just an exciting time for people that are in the bacon business.
A guy walked in here the other day with bacon on a donut. Now, that's where I drew the line. I love donuts. I love bacon. Let's just keep them separate.
Max, I think you're definitely in the minority. Bacon is something that people really like on everything, even donuts or ice cream.
Isn't that remarkable, though? You know, you and I both recall when the belly of the hog was such a drag on the value of the hog. It was so worthless almost. It was so derided. I mean, bacon was, you know, who wants bacon? It's not good for you. I mean, that was the chatter 30, 40 years ago. And now look what's happened.
Absolutely. Times have changed. And, I think, people looking at bacon for, they love the flavor, they love the texture, all those things are happening. Then even the chefs of America are using more creative ways to make bacon in different ways and be able to provide that. So it's definitely a exciting time to be in the bacon business, and really that demand, we expect bellies and bacon demand to be as high this summer as it was last year.
Historically, the farm bill has not been a big economic driver as far as the livestock sector has been concerned, right?
Yes.
Are you watching the writing of the farm bill this year? Does it matter from the standpoint of poultry or pork or beef, what goes into that bill? Yes, I can imagine there are certain provisions like environmental provisions that matter in the management of these livestock operations, but what about really having a market impact?
Absolutely. I mean, there's definitely things we're watching. We actually have done several projects here in the last 3 months to kind of prepare for the farm bill. One of those is on the vaccines and doing a vaccine bank for in case we ever do get a major outbreak in disease, if it's in the cattle side, on the pork side, or on the poultry side. So definitely inform economics and everyone in the industry is watching, even on the livestock side, about the farm bill, because, again, that's something that we really have to look at ourselves and be able to, build up some kind of vaccine bank or build in so, we can prevent a massive nationwide disease outbreak.
Especially in terms of the foot and mouth disease, I think that's what most of the folks in the animal health industry are concerned about. Is it not the possibility we could have an outbreak here and how devastating it might be?
Yeah, it's definitely possible. I think that's limited on the amount, but there's other diseases out there too that can be a big problem. And so we have to be ready for those and not just kind of shut our borders and say it'll never happen here in America. You know, we have gone through similar, if it's been avian flu or the PRRS virus or other viruses that have really affected our industry and affected our prices. So we have to be ready for those, and we can't just sit here and say we'll just wait till they come and then deal with it.
David, thanks for coming in. It's great to have you in the studio. We sure appreciate it.
Thanks, Max.
David Williams, Informa Economics.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
It was a very bad day in the stock market on this weekend trade on Friday. It wasn't a good week in the grain market either, as we take a look at a red screen on closing prices as we ended the week. The screen is red, and here are the closing numbers. March wheat ending down 4 cents a bushel, 4.46¾. March corn ended the week down 0.75 cents at 3.61½ cents a bushel. March soybeans down 6.5 cents for the day, ending the day and the week at 9.78¾. After spending a couple of days above the $10 a bushel mark, but that faded as apparently moisture conditions improved in the soybean areas of South America, particularly in Argentina, and that took some of the worry out of the market. Forecasts for wetter, cooler weather eased concerns about the Argentine drought damage, while a drier outlook in Brazil could help harvesting what is expected to be another bumper crop. Several private forecasters this week cut their forecasts for Argentine crops, but expanded Brazilian harvest views. And one trader said, if we lose 2 or 3 million metric tons in bean supply in Argentina, it could be offset by an equivalent amount in Brazil. So, as I say, the March corn contract ended at 3.61½, and we'll be starting at lower prices on Monday when the market reopens. The livestock market causing some wrinkled brows on faces of cattlemen at the National Cattlemen's Beef Association in Arizona this week, because the roller coaster ride in cattle prices continuing. But today we saw a pretty good end to the week, with particularly in feeder cattle. In live cattle futures, February, we ended at $126.85 a hundredweight, and that was a gain of only 30 cents for today. But the April feeder cattle market up $1.55 for the day at $151.77. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association ending its annual meeting this weekend. The American Sheep Industry Association ending, well, it ended its convention in San Antonio, Texas, earlier ahead of the weekend. And then the National Association of Conservation Districts meeting in Nashville ended the meeting, their annual meeting, at midweek. Meanwhile, as we look ahead to the new month that we're involved in, February, a lot going on again. We have the two major farm equipment shows of the season taking place in different parts of the country. Coming up the middle of the month, Louisville, Kentucky, the National Farm Machinery Show will take place, along with the tractor pulling competition. That always attracts a lot of people to Louisville. But at the same time, on the West Coast in Tulare, California, the World Ag Expo takes place. It's billed itself as the world's largest equipment show. And I would certainly agree with that to some extent. But particularly the largest show with the most variety of equipment, because of the 240 crops that are produced in the state of California. And as I've said several times, the first time I visited the World Ag Expo, I had to keep asking people from California, so what's that machine? And what does that machine do? I had never seen a tree shaker before, but with the almond orchards and the other orchards they have in California, that's quite a show in itself. And the other event, mid-month February, the National Outstanding Young Farmer Awards Program. That will take place in Sacramento, California, and I'm looking forward to participating in this year's event, something I've done every year since 1965. We honor the nation's four outstanding young farmers. Well, that's our time for this week. Thank you for keeping up and for joining us. Max Armstrong and I do appreciate your company every week here on The Markets. So thank you. And we're brought to you by the CME Group.